like, this is me time, I earned this, or no one can judge me for this drink. I just operated on a golden retriever who ran into a barbed wire fence, with her eyeball hanging out on a little string today. See? Horrific. That's how you trick yourself. And then one day I was at Jan's. I mean, my wife's sister's place. A few years back, for my goddaughter's big wedding reception. Wine, home brews. I brought champagne. But I also brought a bottle of Rich and Rare for myself. And I stashed it in their bathroom, inside their toilet tank. Why? Because I didn't want anyone to see how much I was drinking. Silence. Darby realized his drumbeat on the table had stopped. Ashley nodded sympathetically. My mom struggled with that, too. But, Ed prodded Sandy's shoulder. Well, thank God for my cousin Sandy here, because she called me up at 2 o'clock yesterday and told me she was going to drive my ass up to Denver for family Christmas. No excuses.
Sandy sniffled. We missed you, Eddie.
So yeah, he straightened. To answer the circle time question, my biggest fear is this Christmas in Aurora. I'm afraid my wife and sons will be there at Jack's tomorrow night, and I'm even more afraid they won't.
For a long moment, no one spoke. Ashley swallowed. Some color was back in his cheeks.
Thanks, Ed. No problem. That couldn't have been easy to say. It wasn't. Been sober a while? Nope, Ed said. I drank this morning.
Silence. That, Ashley hesitated. That sucks.
Tell me about it.
Another volatile silence, and the lights flickered again, as five people shared oxygen in this little room, with three concealed weapons.
Excuses are poison, Ed repeated. Doing the right thing is hard. Talking yourself out of it is easy. Does that make sense?
Yeah, Ashley said. More than you know.
Then he glanced purposefully over at Darby and raised a fist to his mouth. He coughed once. The trap engaged. She walked, feeling the tiny hairs prickle on her skin. She looked Lars in the eye as she moved toward that front door. He glanced up from his pamphlet and watched her pass, twisting his scrawny neck to follow her. And then Darby tugged the door open. A rush of sub-zero air, slashing wind, gritty snowflakes peppering her eyes. She stepped outside, her shoulders tense, the knife tight in her knuckles.
Follow me, rodent face. Let's end this.
11:55 p.m. Lars didn't follow her. The door closed. She took a few shaky steps outside, her Converse sinking into the fresh snow, her heart banging against her ribs. She'd been certain Lars would follow her. He should have been right behind her, shadowing her, his slouching frame filling the doorway, his back to the room so Ashley could strike. He wasn't. Darby shivered and watched the door. No need for concealment now. She held the Swiss Army knife like an ice pick as she stood in the orange light, waiting for the door to creak open. But it didn't. What had gone wrong? The eye contact. The eye contact with Lars had been too much, she realized. She'd overplayed her hand. And now the armed criminal was still inside the building, with Ashley and the others, and the trap had failed. Okay, fine. She had a choice now. Go back inside, or keep walking to his van. Another howl of wind whipped her face with snow. For a moment, she couldn't see. She blinked furiously, mashing her eyes with her thumbs. When her vision returned, the world had darkened. She realized the sodium vapor lamp that hung over the visitor center front door had fizzled out. Another grim omen to add to the list.
Seconds count, she reminded herself. Make a choice.
So she did. She decided to keep walking to Lars's van. She'd open the door, check on Jay again, and flick the dome light on. Maybe even the high beams. That would give Lars another reason to come outside. And Ashley would have his chance to attack. If he was still ready. If the ambush could still be salvaged. Something else occurred to her as she walked. What if there was a gun in the van? Her first search had been brief and frantic. Lars was certainly carrying one, of course. But what if there was another? Yes, a gun would be a game-changer. Her stomach growled. Shambling through knee-deep snow, her left shoe flapping without its lace, she crossed the 50 feet to Lars's van. Snow had regathered on the windshield, hardened to sheets of ice where it melted. She'd made sure to leave the Astro's rear door unlocked, and she was glad she had. She circled to the back of the van now. She passed the faded decal of the cartoon fox, the blistered letters of "We Finish What We Start," and wondered if Lars had bought the vehicle from a business that went Chapter 11. Or maybe he'd murdered someone for it. Or maybe Rodent Face himself was a freelance handyman. Maybe that was how he got inside your house and scoped out your kids' bedrooms, opening drawers and sniffing pillows. Darby glanced over her shoulder, back at the Whanapani Visitor Center. The front door was still shut. The lamp was still dead. No silhouettes standing near the window. Which was surprising. She'd expected to see Lars watching her, or at least Ashley. She couldn't even see Ed and Sandy. They were seated too far back. Save for the dim amber glow behind the half-buried glass, you'd never guess the tiny structure was populated at all. What's happening in there? Hopefully nothing. Yet. She considered jumping in her Honda and punching the horn. That would sure draw some attention. Lars would certainly come outside to investigate that. But so might Ed and Sandy. The situation could unravel. The element of surprise could be lost. Shots could be fired. Bullets could ricochet. She tugged the Astro's rear door, still unlocked. It scraped open, dropping a shelf of snow, revealing soupy darkness inside as her pupils adjusted. She whispered, "Hey." Silence. "Jay, it's okay. It's me." Another tense moment, long enough for Darby to worry. And then finally the girl stirred, her fingernails gripping the kennel bars for balance. The frame made a twanging noise, like taut cables. Darby reached into her jeans pocket for her phone, to turn on the LED flashlight. But it wasn't there. She patted her other pocket, also empty. She'd left her phone in her purse, on the edge of that porcelain sink, inside the men's restroom. Stupid, stupid, stupid. Inside the van, she smelled the same odors. Dog blankets, urine, stale sweat. And identified a foul new one.
"I threw up," the girl whispered, timidly.
It's all right."
"Sorry, my stomach hurts."
"Mine too," Darby thought. She leaned back and peered around the Astro's icy taillight. Yes, the building's door was still shut. "I'm sorry, Jay. We're both having a crappy night. But we'll get through it, okay?"
"I didn't mean to throw up."
"It's fine."
"I never throw up, ever."
"Believe me, Jay, that'll change in college."
"College makes you throw up?"
"Something like that."
"I hate throwing up. If that's what college is like, I'm not going."
"All right, Jay, listen." Darby touched the kennel, and the little girl's fingers squeezed hers through the bars. "I'm going to help you, and to help you, I need you to first help me, okay?"
"Okay."
"I need you to try and remember. The farting man, Can you describe the gun he's carrying?
It's little, black. He keeps it in his pocket.
Of course. She leaned out and checked the building's front door again. Still closed, and asked, Did you see him keep any knives in here? Bats, machetes?
I don't know.
Any other guns?
One other.
Darby's heart double-tapped.
Where? No, it's not a regular gun.
Her mind raced with possibilities, and she barely choked out. Why? Is it bigger?
It shoots nails.
Like a... Darby hesitated. Like a nail gun? Jay nodded. And you're sure? She nodded harder. A nail gun. Just like the cartoon fox on the van. Darby remembered the bandage on Jay's hand, the bloody little smudge on her palm, and it all fit together. Punishment for an escape attempt, maybe? Or maybe this thing he called a yellow card was just an appetizer for whatever horrific main course Lars had in mind for her once he drove her to his remote cabin in the Rockies. Her hands were shaking again, not with terror, rage. A freaking nail gun. That's the kind of psycho we're up against. And the nail gun is here? She asked. It's in the van with us?
I think so.
Darby doubted a power tool would be an even match against Lars's 45, but it was a hell of an upgrade from a 2-inch Swiss Army knife. She'd never operated a nail gun before, or even seen one outside of a Lowe's hardware store, but she hoped it would be simple to learn. How far could it fire a nail? Was it heavy? Loud? Would a nail to the skull kill the victim, or just maim? Point and click, right? She touched Jay's right hand through the bars and found the 7-year-old's fingers were slick with fresh, cold blood. The scab on her palm must have broken. Point and click. Darby vowed she'd kill Lars tonight. Maybe when she and Ashley finally cornered this sicko and pummeled him into a whimpering, broken heap. Well, maybe she'd keep stabbing. Maybe she'd cut his throat. Maybe she'd enjoy it. Maybe. She leaned back and checked on the building again. Still no activity. Now she was getting worried about Ashley, Ed, and Sandy. Was Lars really just standing idly by in there, allowing Darby to poke around in the parking lot outside? After finding her styrofoam cup in the snow? After stalking her and Ashley into the restroom? After she made knowing eye contact with him on her way out the door? Jesus, what the hell was going on? Bloody scenarios cycled through her mind like camera flashes. She braced, half expecting the thump of a gunshot. But there was nothing. Only icy silence. Only the distant moan of the wind. Only Jay and herself, standing on shaky legs in that desolate parking lot. The nail gun, she decided. Lars's nail gun was her new objective. She'd find it, figure out how to operate it, and then she'd run back inside the visitor center, kick open the door, and whatever was going on inside, she'd fire a nail right into Lars's whiskery little face. Ka-thunk. Asshole dead. Innocent child saved. Nightmare over. That would work. She looked back at Jay, her teeth chattering. All right. Where do you think Lars keeps his nail gun? Back here or in the front?
The other one keeps it in an orange box.
Keeps it where?
It used to be back here, but I think they moved it.
But Darby wasn't listening. Jay's little voice bled away, and in a flash of scalding panic, the prior sentence snagged in her brain and echoed. The other one keeps it in an orange box. The other one. The other one. The other one. Slipping, staggering back outside, she hit her kneecaps on hardened snow, steadied herself against the brake light, and peered around it. The building's door was now open. Lars stood in the doorway. Beside him, Ashley.
The other one.
They watched her, 50 feet away, framed by interior light. They appeared to be speaking to each other, in guarded whispers, so Ed and Sandy wouldn't hear from inside. Their faces were black shadow, unreadable. But Lars had his scrawny arm chicken-winged up inside his jacket, resting on the grip of his pistol. And Ashley had the rock in a sock out, in his right hand. He was swinging it, smacking it against his palm.
Midnight. 12:01 a.m. 2 versus 1. She'd been right about that part. Ashley was in on the kidnapping. He'd lied to her. About driving the other car, about not knowing Lars, about everything. He'd played along with her in the restroom. He put his tongue in her mouth. He'd been so authentic, so convincingly human and frightened. She'd believed it all. She told him everything, her entire plan. All of her options, her thought processes, her fears. She gave him everything, including a new weapon. She whirled to face Jay.
You didn't tell me there were two of them.
I thought you knew.
How could I know?
Sorry.
Why didn't you fucking mention it?
I'm sorry.
Jay's voice broke. Darby realized she was yelling at a 7-year-old girl who'd recently taken a steel nail through the palm. What did it matter? It was Darby's fault. Her mistake. Her horrible, fatal miscalculation. And now it was 2 versus 1. And they were both as good as dead. Or worse. One of the silhouettes started walking toward them. Her heart seized up. Okay, where's their nail gun?
I don't know.
Front or back?
I don't know.
The girl sniffed. She needed to find it fast. Under the front seats, maybe. This orange box had to be large. There were only so many places it could fit. She raced to the driver's side door, her feet sinking, like running in quicksand. She chanced a look over her shoulder. The advancing figure was halfway to them, 20 feet back, taking high steps on the footpath. She recognized the beanie, the slouching walk. It was Lars. His right hand swung past a slice of light, and she saw a blocky shape. His .45 caliber pistol. Jay, Darby hissed, close your eyes.
What's going to happen?
Just close your eyes. She reached the Astro's driver door, hitting it with both palms, her mind screaming, find their nail gun, kill this asshole, then take his gun and kill that lying snake, Ashley. She tugged the door handle. Locked. Her stomach plunged. Because Lars had relocked it. Of course he had. He was in there last. It was locked, locked, locked.
You asked my brother to kill me?
Lars's gurgling voice called out, drawing closer.
Is that right?
They're brothers. Shit, shit, shit. Crunchy footsteps, like breaking eggshells, coming toward her.
He says you asked him to bash my brains in.
His voice was so frighteningly close. Hoarse, rattling in the crisp air, hot with exhaled fog. The Astro's driver door was a no-go. Darby scrambled back to the rear of the van, catching herself on the ajar door for balance, and looked back inside the dark vehicle. At Jay's eyes, brimming with panicked tears, full of reflected light. At her rash red cheeks, her tiny fingernails. She pleaded,
run.
Lars's footsteps crunched closer. Darby pressed her Swiss Army knife into the little girl's outstretched fingers, almost dropping it. "Use this," she said, touching the serrations on the blade. "Scraping motions, okay? To saw at the kennel bars."
"He's coming!"
"Do it, Jay. Promise?"
"I promise."
"Keep cutting. You'll get out."
"What are you going to do?"
Darby stepped back out and slammed the rear door, dropping a shelf of snow. She hadn't answered Jay's question, because she had no answer at all. "I have no goddamn idea."
Why are you running?" Lars called.
Darby scrambled through the snow. It was waist deep off the path, like hauling herself out of a wading pool, over and over with every lurching step. Hard, gasping breaths, her throat stung, her calves burned.
"Hey, I just want to talk."
From the clarity of his voice, he was less than 10 feet behind her, chasing her. His mouth breathing had morphed into a steady pant. Low, guttural, wolf-like. Her left shoe, still unlaced, tugged off in the snow. She grabbed it and continued, half barefoot, as his labored breathing grew behind her. He was gaining, she knew. A few paces closer and he'd grab her ankle.
I'm gonna catch you anyway."
A metallic rattle. The gun, moving in his hand. But she knew the pistol was just for intimidation. If Lars really wanted to shoot her, he would have done it already. That would alert Ed and Sandy, so Ashley had probably ordered his brother to run her down, to kill her discreetly, via suffocation or a snapped neck. His brother. His fucking brother. Darby passed the bare flagpole and looked back. Lars was a pursuing shadow. He'd lost his Deadpool beanie. She saw weedy blonde hair, milky in the dim light, a receding hairline, the furious fog of his breathing. He'd stopped shouting at her. He was too winded now. The deep snow was too exhausting. It was a slow-motion nightmare. "He's going to catch me," Darby knew. She was already tiring, muscles throbbing, joints mushy. "He's going to run me down out here and wrap his hands around my neck and choke me until I die." He was right behind her now. She could smell his salty sweat. She'd lost her lead and given up both of her weapons. The rock in a sock to Ashley, the pocket knife to Jay. And now all she had left was a bullet in her pocket and a size 8 shoe in her hand. She considered throwing it at Lars, but that'd just be a nuisance. He'd swat it away without breaking stride. There was nowhere to run away. Ashley was smartly guarding the building's front door. She didn't have her keys, so locking herself inside Blue wasn't an option. Running wasn't either. There were only miles of jagged Colorado taiga in all directions. Frigid and unsympathetic. Just crunchy alpine trees, sparse ground cover, and fatal drops concealed by snow. How long would she last before succumbing to the creeping death of hypothermia? "I can't keep running." She considered stopping, standing her shaky ground, and fighting Lars. Bad odds.
"Turn around,"
Lars huffed behind her.
Let's talk."
She needed to decide. If she stopped now, she'd have a few seconds to catch her breath before the fight. But if she kept running and he tackled her, she'd be winded, and her odds would be even worse. Or the layout of the Whanapunny Visitor Center flashed through her mind again. Walls, corners, blind spots. Although the front door was still blocked by Ashley, there was another way into the building. The little triangular windows in the restrooms. She'd seen it in the men's restroom, no larger than a doggy door. She could see it from here, leaking a whisper of orange light through hanging icicles above the stacked picnic tables. Her purse was inside that restroom, with her keys and her phone. Okay, I'll climb those tables, break that window, and get inside. She changed direction. Lars noticed.
Where are you going?
She didn't have a plan for when she got inside. She just went for it. Because, as Sandy said, inside was a hell of a lot better than out. Ed and Sandy were in there, and Ashley and Lars wouldn't dare murder her in view of two witnesses. Would they? No time to think on it. The picnic tables were stored in a heap below that window, crusted with snow. So she climbed them, like giant-sized stairs. One, two, three tables up, wobbling under her weight. But she made it, and she hit the building's triangular window with outstretched hands. Frosted glass, glowing with interior light, bumpy with ice. Too thick to shatter with an elbow. But it was a casement window, opening outward on a rust-eaten hinge. And it seemed to sit crookedly, so she groped for the edges, gripping with numb fingertips. Lars laughed.
What are you doing up there?
A 12-inch icicle dropped from the roof and banged off the table beside her. She winced, gritting her teeth, still pulling, clawing her fingernails into the window's rubber seam.
Hey, girly.
Pull. Pull. Another icicle dropped and exploded, showering her with ice flecks, like glass shards on her cheeks.
Girlie, I'm coming for ya.
Two more icicles dropped to her right and left, exploding like twin gunshots in her eardrums. And the picnic table wobbled underneath her as Rodent Face climbed up toward her, clamoring on elbows and knees like a racing, scuttling animal. But she was only focused on that hinged window, on that warm glow behind the glass, so teasingly close, on her clamped fingertips, wrenching the thing open. Pull, 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 pull. The mechanism broke. The window came free. She let it fall, and it shattered off an icy picnic table. Lars raised a hand to shield his face from the shards. Oh, Jesus Christ, he's right behind me. And Darby was out of time. She lunged inside, face first, performing a desperate swan dive through the tiny opening. Icy fingers clasped around her ankle.
Gotcha.
She kicked free. 12:04 a.m. She dropped 6 feet and landed on a toilet. Spine first, slamming into the porcelain lip with the small of her back. She rolled off it, kicking a toilet paper dispenser off the wall, knocking a stall door open. Her skull banged against tile floor, flash bulbs behind her eyes. The toilet flushed. She scrambled upright, bumping the stall door again, whirling to face the empty window. Just a triangle of darkness. Snowflakes swirled inside. The opening was probably too small for Lars to follow her through. But she couldn't count on that. Plus, Ashley was still around. She backed away from the window, down the long rectangle of a restroom, past the stalls, past Peyton Manning takes it in the ass, past the stained urinals, until she bumped into the sink with her bruised back. Another flare of pain. She'd left her purse here. She scooped it up, feeling inside for the reassuring jingle of her Honda keys and her iPhone. 3% battery. She held her breath and listened. She could hear Lars's footsteps outside the window and his wheezing mouth breaths under the whine of the wind. He was stymied now, unwilling to climb through and risk getting his bony ass stuck, unwilling to leave the little window unguarded and circle around to the front. It was eerie. He'd given up speaking to her. Just grunting, huffing animal sounds now. "Keep moving, Darby." She heard voices from the visitor center lobby, muffled by the door. Ed and Sandy had probably heard her fall, and she recognized the robotic tones of the radio. Another CDOT update. What was the timetable before help arrived now? Dawn, right? 6 hours? 7? Don't think about that. Keep moving. Ashley was nearby but unaccounted for, and this terrified her. Worse, she was unarmed now. She hoped Jay could saw through the kennel bars with her serrated knife, or this was all wasted. She just had to buy the little girl enough time to do so, assuming she could survive the next few minutes in close quarters with two killers, and then drive them both to safety, assuming Blue could limp through Snowmageddon. All in all, 3 colossal assumptions. Unlikely? Didn't even do it justice. No, Blue was snowed in. The snow was too deep now. But what about Sandy's truck? Tire chains? Good lift? Yeah, that thing stood a chance. She closed a fist around her keys, letting the sharp points protrude between her knuckles. She could do some damage to an attacker's face, or gouge an eye if she got lucky. Her Dryden Hall dorm key was particularly sharp, like a little fillet knife. She heard shuffling outside. She froze, listening. Something heavy moved and scraped, followed by a thud of displaced snow. A picnic table shifting. She knew Lars was attempting, a second time, to climb the wobbly stack of tables and follow her inside. Any second now, that chinless little face would appear in the window, grinning with demented cheer. Time to go. Darby slipped on her left shoe, double-knotted the shoelace. Then she slung her purse over her shoulders, car keys still clenched in her knuckles, and pushed out into the Wanapani Visitor Center lobby. Ed was fussing with the radio's antenna through the security shutter. He performed a confused double-take in her direction, and she knew why. She'd exited the building 20 minutes ago, and now she'd returned through the restrooms. Beyond him, Sandy napped on the bench, her legs hunched, her paperback covering her face. "Find a cell signal?" Ed asked. Darby didn't answer. She looked ahead, past Espresso Peak, at the front door. That was where Ashley stood, his broad shoulders blocking her exit. He was staring at her. The flinching, nervous asthmatic she'd spoken to just an hour ago was gone, just a discarded act. This new Ashley was still and solid, with deep, observant eyes. He looked her up and down. She had snow on her knees. Her cheeks were flushed red, her skin sticky with sweat, her Honda keys clasped in her fist. And then he glanced at the center table, as if ordering her to take a seat. She stared back at him, gritting her teeth and trying to appear fearless, defiant, like a courageous hero encircled by evil forces. Instead, she almost cried. She was certain now. She'd die tonight. "Hey," Ed leaned between them, straining to remember her name. Are you okay, Dara?" "For Christ's sake, it's Darby." She swallowed, her voice mouse-like. "I'm fine." She wasn't. She felt sobs trapped in her chest, shuddery spasms struggling to escape. Her spine ached where she'd landed on the toilet. She wanted to jump forward, grab Ed by the shoulders, to scream at this nice old veterinarian and his sleeping cousin, "Run! For the love of God, run right now!" But where? Ashley nodded again at the table, harder. At her chair. She noticed a brown object neatly placed on the center of her seat and recognized her brown napkin. The same napkin they'd used before, back when she thought he was an ally. She approached the chair and picked up the napkin. Still watching her, Ashley's lip curled. It was the beginning of a smug grin, unnoticed by Ed and Sandy. She unfolded the napkin with numb, clumsy fingers.
If you tell them, I kill them both.
12:09 a.m. Ashley moved to the table and sat directly across from her. He'd crossed the room silently, and he sat now with both palms flat on the tabletop. His hands were large and calloused. Darby refolded the napkin and set it in her lap. The radio crackled.
I'm sick of Go Fish, Ashley said crisply. How about something else?
She said nothing.
How about, he thought. Oh, how about war?
She glanced over at Ed and Sandy. Ashley snapped his fingers.
Hey, I'm right here, Darbo. Don't worry about the rules. War is real simple. Simpler than Go Fish, even. You just cut the deck in two, see? And take turns drawing, one after the other. And we see who has the higher card. Higher card takes both and adds them to your deck. You know, because every war is fought one battle at a time.
He grinned, pleased with himself, and fluidly shuffled the cards in front of her. Then he curled the cards backward with a harsh chatter.
Winner has a full deck at the end.
He looked her in the eyes.
And the loser? Well, she's left with nothing.
Behind her, Ed pumped the Kofi carafe to fill his cup, and it made that drowning scream again, like lungs bubbling with water. Something about it made her shoulder blades quiver.
Bad news, friends. Ed rattled the security shutter. Coffee's out.
Ashley's eyes goggled with faux horror.
What? No more caffeine? Afraid so. Well, I guess we're all going to start murdering each other now.
Ashley shuffled the cards a final time. It occurred to Darby, in a slow drip, that these grubby playing cards were probably not a fixture of the Wanapani rest area. The brochure stand was bolted down, and the radio and coffee was caged behind a security grate. Ashley had brought these cards himself, because he was a playful sort of evil, fascinated by games and tricks, sleight of hand, surprises, and misdirection.
I'm a magic man, Lars, my brother.
The clues had all been there. She just hadn't seen them.
You should get some rest, Ashley told her. You look tired.
Her throat felt like dry paper.
I'm fine. Yeah?
Yeah.
So, no rest for the wicked?
He grinned.
Right?
Something like that.
How much sleep did you get last night?
Enough.
Enough, huh? What's that?
Her voice broke. An hour, two?
Oh, no.
That's not enough. Ashley leaned forward, creaking his chair, and divvied the cards between them. She marveled. His fingers were so chillingly fast.
Humans are built for 6 to 9 hours of sleep per night, he told her. I get a solid 8 every night. That ain't a recommendation, honey. That's biology.
See,
less than that erodes your brain function. That's everything. Your reflexes, your emotional stability, your memory, even your intelligence.
Then we'll be evenly matched, Darby said.
Ed chuckled, returning to his seat. Kick his ass, please.
But she didn't pick up her cards, Neither did Ashley. They quietly regarded each other across the table as the wind growled outside. A gust blew through the broken window in the men's restroom, rattling the door on its hinges. The temperature in the room was dropping, but so far, no one had noticed.
"Fortunately for you," Ashley said, "the card game war is entirely luck. You know, unlike the real thing."
Darby studied his eyes. They were vast, emerald green, flecked with amber. She searched them for something recognizable, something human to relate to, fear, caution, self-awareness, but found nothing. "Eyeballs are on stocks," she'd learned randomly, back at an art gallery in October. She forgot the name of the artist, but he'd been there, mingling with the crowd, sipping a Dos Equis, gleefully explaining that he'd incorporated authentic autopsy photos into his work. To Darby, the shape of the human ocular nerves had looked disturbingly insectoid, like antenna or a garden slug. Something about it made her skin crawl. Now she imagined Ashley's big eyes hanging in their sockets, firing electrical signals along those drooping stalks into the coils of his brain. He was a monster, an alien bundle of nerves and flesh, utterly inhuman. And he was still watching her.
"Unlike the real thing," he repeated.
The playing cards sat between them into ignored heaps. Questions fluttered in her mind like trapped birds, things she desperately wanted to ask aloud but couldn't. Not while Ed and Sandy were within earshot. "Why are you doing this? Why abduct a child? What are you going to do with her?" And those green dragon eyes kept staring back at her, full of secrets. Jewel-like, scanning her body, assessing her dimensions, running contingencies and what-ifs. They were frighteningly intelligent, in all the same ways Lars's had been frighteningly dumb. But it was an icy intelligence. Other questions sparked in her mind. "How fast are you? How strong are you? If I slashed your face with Blue's keys, could I blind you? Right now, if I ran for the building's front door, could I make it?" A door opened. An icy draft slipped into the room. Ed glanced over.
"Hi, Lars."
Ashley smirked. Over a snarl of deflected wind, Rodentface took position by the door. His right hand tucked in his jacket pocket, wrapped around the grip of that black 45. She'd seen it now. Glimpsed twice when he'd chased her. She knew little about firearms, but she recognized this one was magazine-fed, which meant it held more shots than a revolver's 5 or 6. She could just barely identify its outline under his blue coat, a bulge at his right hip, but only because she knew to look for it. Ed wouldn't notice it, and Sandy was asleep. Darby was surrounded again, Ashley at the table, and Lars posted at the door. She'd been surrounded this entire time. They'd been tacitly coordinating their locations all night, although she sure hoped her swan dive through the restroom window had been a surprise. It had certainly saved her life, at least for a few more.
"Dara," Ed said, startling her. "You never answered the question, did you?"
"What?"
"You know, the circle time question. Your biggest fear."
He twirled his empty styrofoam cup on the table.
"I gave mine. Ashley gave his door hinge story. Sandy hates snakes. So what about you?"
All eyes darted to her. She swallowed. She still had Ashley's, "If you tell them, I kill them both," napkin clutched tightly in her lap.
"Yeah," Ashley suppressed a grin. Tell us, what scares you, Darbs?
Words clogged up in her throat.
I don't know.
Guns? He prompted.
No.
Nail guns?
No.
Getting murdered?
No.
I don't know. Getting murdered is pretty scary.
Failure, she said, interrupting Ashley and looking those green eyes dead on.
My biggest fear is making the wrong choice, failing, and letting someone get kidnapped or killed.
Silence. On the bench, Sandy stirred in her sleep. That's... Ed shrugged.
Okay, that was a weird one, but thanks.
She's... Ashley started to say something, but stopped himself. Ed didn't notice, but Darby did, and it thrilled her. What did he almost blurt out? She, as in Jay Nissen, the little San Diego girl in the van outside, whose life hung in the balance right now. It was just a small error, only a fraction of a sentence, but it told Darby she'd caught her enemy off guard. Maybe Ashley and Lars had underestimated her, this 110-pound art major from Boulder who'd stumbled into their kidnapping plot. Surely they couldn't have predicted that restroom window escape. She was proud of that. She hoped she was getting under their skin. They don't want to kill me here, in front of witnesses. Because then they'd have to kill Ed and Sandy, too. And that seemed to be a last resort. One homicide was probably easier to manage than three. They'd wanted to kill or incapacitate her outside, discreetly. But she'd outsmarted them, hurtled face first through a tiny-ass window, bruised her spine on a toilet, and earned herself another 10 minutes of life. Those 10 minutes were almost up. Inhale, she reminded herself. Count to five, exhale. She had to keep her breaths full and steady. She couldn't lose it, not now. Inhale, count to five, exhale. Ashley glanced over her shoulder, to his brother, and gave a slight but commanding nod. Without question, he was the alpha. If Darby killed one of them tonight, it would need to be him. She wondered how much of what he'd said was true. The buried car outside wasn't really his. Was he really studying accounting in Salt Lake City? Had he really almost died in a coal mine in Oregon, with his thumb crushed inside a rusty hinge? Ashley seemed intoxicated by the act of lying, misdirecting, wearing different hats, presenting different versions of himself. He was a kid performing a magic show. It was past midnight now. Darby had to make it for another 6 hours until the CDOT snowplows arrived at dawn and opened up the highway for an escape. That was a lot of 10-minute increments, but she'd try. She didn't know what Ashley's little nod to his brother had meant. So far, Lars had remained glued to the front door. But she didn't like it. The two brothers had just made another silent chess move against her. And she was now, again, on the defensive. But as long as Ed and Sandy are here, they won't kill me. She glanced up at the clock on the wall, and for a bleak moment, she thought about how far away dawn was, how dark and cold the night was, how outnumbered and outmatched she was. They could kill everyone in this room. Maybe they planned to. Maybe the threat on the napkin was just a little game. Ashley grinned, like he'd read her mind. This stalemate won't last.
All right, everyone, he said cheerily. War with Darbs seems to be a bust. Who's up for a new round of circle time?
Ed shrugged.
Sure.
Let's do first job? No,
Let's do favorite movies. Ashley glanced around the stuffy room, a beaming game show host.
Okay, if I answer first again?
Knock yourself out.
All right, actually, well, I don't have a single favorite movie, but rather a favorite genre of movies. Is that acceptable for everyone?
Ed gave a who cares hand wave.
Monster movies, Ashley said, his eyes darting back across the table to Darby. Not like small monsters like werewolves. I'm talking about the huge, towering ones, 20 stories tall, like Godzilla and Rodan. Kaiju movies, they're called in Japan. You know, the kind where something big is terrorizing a city, hurling model cars around.
Ed nodded, not really listening. He was tilting his coffee cup, trying to capture the last few precious drops. It didn't matter, because Ashley was only looking at Darby as he spoke, his words clean and composed, revealing his crest-white teeth.
See, golly, I just love kaiju movies. And the thing I find fascinating about them is this. The human heroes, Bryan Cranston and that bland Sergeant Vanilla guy, in the 2014 Godzilla reboot, for example, they're just placeholders. They're ciphers for the audience. Do these puny humans have any effect on the actual plot?
He let his rhetorical question float for longer than necessary.
Nope, he finally answered. Zero. Their role in the story is entirely reactive. Godzilla, Mothra, the Mutos, the true stars of the show. They're going to fight and settle their business, and the humans can't possibly hope to stop the carnage. Does this make sense to you?
Darby didn't answer.
No matter what you try, the monsters are going to do what they want.
Ashley leaned forward, creaking his chair, and she whiffed his moist breath as his voice lowered into a husky croak. See, the monsters are going to fight and flatten skyscrapers and smash bridges, and all you can do is get the hell out of their way, or you're going to get crushed. Silence. She couldn't look away, like staring down a rabid animal. His breath was overpowering, like boiled egg yolks and bitter French roast, curdling with meat-like odors. 60 minutes ago, his tongue had been a warm slug in her mouth. But now, his boyish smile returned, like slipping a rubber Halloween mask back on. And in another moment, he was back to being the jovial chatterbox she'd first met.
So what about you, Darbs? What's your favorite type of movie? Horror? Ghosts? Torture porn?
Rom-coms, she answered. Lars giggled by the front door, a raspy noise that reminded her of a chainsaw on idle. Ashley traded glances with his brother, and his lips curled a little as the swirling snow intensified outside.
This is going to be a fun night.
Maybe so, Darby thought, looking him in the eye. But I promise I won't make it easy.
But, Ashley said, rubbing his eyes in stage-managed sleepiness. I admit, I would kill for a cup of coffee right now.
Actually, Ed considered. Hey, you know, we have some in the truck. It's the cheapo instant camping type, where you just pour in the grounds and add hot water. It tastes like river silt, but it's coffee. Anyone interested?
Cowboy coffee?
Ashley beamed, like a prospector discovering gold. He'd planned this.
That would be wonderful.
Sandy hates it.
Well, luckily she's asleep.
Yeah? Takers? All right.
Ed slipped on a pair of black winter gloves, moving to the door.
I'll be back in a sec.
No worries,
Ashley's grin inflated.
Take your time, amigo.
Darby tried to think of something to say. Wait, stop, please don't leave the room. But her mind was as thick as peanut butter. The moment passed, and in another stomach-fluttering instant, Ed was gone. The visitor center's front door swung closed, not quite engaging. Lars pushed it. Click. The two brothers glanced at each other, then at Darby. In a microsecond, the room's air pressure changed. The three of them were now alone. For however long it took Ed to walk out to Sandy's truck, rummage through his luggage, find his camping coffee, and walk back. 60 seconds, maybe? Now, the only thing keeping Darby alive was Sandy. And she wasn't even awake. She snored like a purring cat on the blue bench, her arms crossed across her pot belly, her paperback precariously balanced on her face. The lightest breeze could disturb it. For the first time all night, Darby could read the title. Luck of the Devil. For the next 60 seconds or so, Darby's life depended on how light of a sleeper this middle-aged woman was.
Rom-coms,
Ashley muttered under his breath.
That's cute.
Better than Godzilla.
All right, Darbs, I'm sick of talking around it.
Ashley kept his voice low, controlled, watching Sandy in the corner of his eye. So here's what's going to happen. I'm going to make you an offer. She listened, but in the back of her mind, she was counting seconds, like steady clockwork. 60 seconds for Ed to walk to his cousin's truck and back. 50 seconds now?
This offer is going to stand once, Darbs, and then it'll be gone forever. No second chances. So think hard, please, before you make a decision.
What are you doing with that little girl? He licked his lips.
We're not talking about Jay right now.
Are you going to kill her?
That's not important.
It's pretty goddamn important to me.
Darby?
He was getting aggravated now, baring his perfect Colgate teeth, his voice a strained whisper. This isn't about her, don't you understand? This is about you and me and my brother and everyone else caught in the crossfire at this rest stop. This is about the decision you're going to make right now.
40 seconds.
She thought about Lars guarding the door behind her, and her stomach tightened with queasy horror. His mooning grin, the shiny scar tissue peppering his hands, his flat little eyes. She didn't think she could say it aloud, but then she did. Is Lars going to rape her?
What? Ashley rolled his eyes. You gross. Darbs, you're not listening.
Answer me, she said, glancing over to Sandy. Or I swear to God, I'll start screaming bloody murder right now.
Do it. He leaned back. See what happens.
She still had her Honda keys in her knuckles, on her lap. The sharpest one, her Dryden Hall dorm key, was gripped between her thumb and index finger. But she couldn't trust herself to clear the table fast enough. Ashley would see her attack coming. He'd raise a hand to protect his face. It wouldn't work. She wasn't strong enough or quick enough.
I dare you,
he whispered. Scream. She almost called his bluff. Then Ashley glanced over Darby's shoulder. He nodded again, and she realized with a shiver of panic, Lars was now standing directly behind her. She hadn't heard him approach, but now she heard the crinkle of his ski jacket flexing, just inches behind her, like the moment they'd first met. She flinched, half expecting those scarred hands to clamp around her throat and squeeze. But Lars knelt instead, snatching her purse from the floor beside her ankle.
Yoink!
He carried it back to the door. Ashley glanced back to her, sucking on his lower lip.
Darbs, so we're clear. I'm giving you a chance to undo all of this.
A big red reset button. It's easy, too, because all you have to do is nothing. Just keep your mouth shut.
20 seconds.
See, Darbs, we'll all